Hi folks, and thanks for listening to this Tortoise Shack podcast. You know what I'm about to say, and you want to click forward 30 seconds, but please hear me out. We've a lot of stuff coming your way this week, including the podcast that went out already with young journalist Mahmoud Mushtaha, who is on the ground in Gaza. And it's actually some uplifting stuff. It's not all doom and gloom as we've been used to. So there's some good news there, and that's available right now on the Patreon feed. So that's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. So if you're not a member, please join us. Help us keep going in 2024. I know I keep saying it's the year of elections, but it really is. And we've lots and lots that we want to cover. And we want to be able to continue to have tough conversations with people who are putting themselves forward as the alternative, and tough conversations with people who are putting themselves forward as the almighty. So if you can, if you have a few quid, if you think you met us down the shops and you said, would you grab a cup of coffee, and you throw us the price for a cup of coffee, this is the way to do it. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And for that, you're getting a ton of additional content, all of our podcasts in one consolidated feed, and they're entirely plea free. So you don't have to listen to me beg. But unfortunately, independent media means just that. We have no ads. We have no sponsors. We want to remain completely independent and free from all corporate interests and editorial oversight that are linked to these corporate interests. So if you can, if you like what we do, if you're one of the thousands of people who are listening, and while you know it's free, you understand that there is a value to it, then please give something back. Last time, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. I'll shut up now. Enjoy the show.
Fuck off, will you? Fresh, yeah?
Shut the fuck up!
I'll do a song called The Streams of Monk Cloudy.
Luke used to sing it, didn't he?
Yeah, but a lot of people don't even know the song, you know, they never heard Luke singing it.
Oh, I know the song, yeah. It's a great song. He sang it very strong, didn't he?
And that's the one he wanted to be remembered by, but lots of people don't know it.
House where the boards do increase, at the foot of Mount Leinster, or in some silent place, by the streams of Bon Clody, where all pleasures do meet, and all I would ask is one kiss from you, sweet.
I used to sing with this English fella, right? He was telling us, he was down in Clare one time, you know. So he asked this big long-winded question, you know. There was a fella that had been playing tunes on the fiddle. They were talking about all the fiddle, and he goes, Clare was really hit badly by the famine, you know, and a lot of the tunes are in a minor key, and do you think that that kind of relates back to the suffering and the hurt and the shame? You know, I just goes, should Jesus, we just come down on a Sunday and we lash them out. So that was, when he was telling me there that he was sitting, he was coming into Bon Cloud. He drives for a living, you know.
He goes around
schools and all that. He's an English fella, but he teaches folk songs in the schools. But he was coming in, he's a real happy fella, you know. He's coming into Bon Cloud one day, you know, and he's in traffic. And he's sitting there in traffic, and it's a lovely summer's day, and it's the window open, and he's singing Bon Cloud at the top of his voice, you know. And he looks out across the window, and the town, you know, the town fella that walks around with the knitted woolen hat looking across at him, and he goes, yeah, fucking idiot. it was fucking brilliant. He thought he was the king of Blade in Ireland there singing. I asked a couple of my mates, what question should I ask Damien Dempsey? And I rang Willa and he said, ask for an Elvis car. What question should I ask him? So Willie's question was, if you're
we're on.
We've been on for the last 20 minutes.
What?
That's where you get the gems. The gems happen in the fucking, the secrets in the silence, you know.
Dirty bastards.
Come here, Willie said, if you weren't a musician, what do you think you'd be doing?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I haven't a clue. Having a clue.
So was there anything that you were in? Like, I wanted to be an electrician. That was my absolute goal, was to be an electrician.
I did love boxing, you know, but I hadn't got that killer instinct, you know.
Yeah.
I hadn't got that killer instinct. I loved sparring, fellas. And,
yeah.
But fighting, you know, your man would be the trainer would be there. It's a war.
You have to want to
hate your man.
Kill them.
I know, yeah. I'm
good at fighting, but I don't want to end the fella's life.
I know, yeah. I know.
And then the ref is only there to pull you apart.
Yeah, because it's a stranger. And I'd be saying he might be a nice fella.
Yeah, the empathy in me, I'd be going
you
in.
I hate him.
So it must have been deadly when it started happening. Your songs and your way of singing was very unique, right? I remember people saying to me, he'll go nowhere, he sings in his own accent, you know? And I'd be like, shit, listen to the lyrics, like, you know?
He sings in his own accent, man, when you think about it, you know?
The L one saying it to you in a big, thick Dublin accent.
Stop singing
in your own bleeding accent.
It's a real insecurity about ourselves. It's a terrible thing that we carry with us. It's the thing that we were talking about earlier, the shame and all that. But we're starting to come over. We're starting to come round. It's starting to... I actually think TikTok, Instagram and all those things, as mad as they are actually pulling us into ourselves, into... So, like, the big shock last year was the Wolf Tones going to the Electric Picnic. Like, the women in the Irish football team sang as innocent as that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was this big, how dare you?
And then everybody went,
fuck you, we'll fucking sing the songs, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
And Mick O'Brien says, we don't build monuments in Ireland. We sing songs. The songs are the monuments.
That's absolutely true, yeah. The history is all in the songs, yeah. The English can sing Rule Britannia, Britannia rules the waves. We will never ever be your slaves, you know? But we can't sing. You are up there.
Yeah.
Take a fuck off.
So, come here, did you not have the insecurity or the shame because everyone around you was singing in that mid-Atlantic? Or did you not know any fucking difference? Was it that simple?
I was just stubborn, you know? Very stubborn.
Stubborn.
If someone tells me not to do something, you know, you can't do that, I go, okay, we'll fucking see about that.
I don't want to kill your man in the ring, but I'm going to fucking sing in my own accent.
That's it, yeah. It's just, I'd be sort of saying, what do you want? Do you want me to sing The Colony in a fucking German accent or something?
Let's try that.
I sing the song of the colony.
Spit you out.
It's fine.
There's something very healing about that. I think there's a Panty Bliss cover of that now coming down. It's like Oklahoma Phobia. We're all on stage. I sing the songs of the colonies.
Some kind of cabaret thing.
That movie, yeah, in Berlin, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That Damien Dempsey.
With the big goose up
cabaret
hot boots on. Coming out doing the Charleston. Yeah.
The can then at the end of it, you know. You'll never kill a will to be free. You're fine.
I think that's why you wrote it. I think you had different intentions, but the progression over the years, it's going to come out. We need it more now than ever.
I went to see you one night with young Alan Green. We went down to Newbridge. We took a pilgrimage down to Newbridge. It was amazing. A pilgrimage to Newbridge. Was it just you and Amo?
To Newbridge, to Mick O'Brien. It was just me, wasn't it?
It was just you and Amo. So I went to see the Druids in the same venue a couple of weeks beforehand. Really.
Oh, sorry, playing. I thought you meant to do a mixed show. Yeah, in Judge Roy Baines.
Judge Roy Baines. Was it just you and Amo?
Amo and Sean McKeown.
I was at the ground and seen the Druids down there, right? And they blew me away because everybody danced. The whole floor was just full of people dancing and the energy was there.
Great band. Amazing.
Then you and Amo and Sean played. And so... In the middle of the show, they're all going, Damo, Damo. And it was the energy and the spirit was just huge. The vibration was huge.
Yeah.
And you just turn around to the mic and you goes, I don't know why you're saying that. I'm just a conduit. Yeah. And it was deadly, like, you know, because I then got it. I understood it myself through my own kind of spiritual journey or whatever, like you understand. Oh, yeah, that's what that is. I heard you saying when you wrote The Colony, you started off writing about your nanny and then it just became this flow.
Yeah. It just flowed. It was like I was in a trance and these like 15, 20 pages of lyrics just flowed out. It was like someone else wrote them, you know. Someone else was writing them. That's what it felt like. The ancestors, I think, you know. Just the way it flowed out. It was twice as long, you know, the rant, as people call it, or the spoken word part, was that was twice as long, so I had to try and edit that down, you know. The song is still 7 minutes, Jesus, long, you know. But my mother said to me, I believe you wrote a song about me mammy. And I said, no. And she goes, she told me you wrote a song about her, she's very sure. So I said, are you serious? Jesus, right, you better write a song then, so.
Because you've talked about premonitions.
Yeah.
Was your ma having a premonition, or was your nanny having a premonition, or was it a bleeding tripartite premonition between the three?
The mother, she knows things before they happen, you know.
You're in that category yourself, brother.
Yeah, and the granny was the same, you know, sort of white witches, they call themselves. They'd sort of, they'd know things before they happened to them, and they'd see people that they hadn't seen for 30 years in their mind and see them, you know, a minute later, and that's, you know, that sort of a sixth sense thing. So my granny just, I don't know where she got it, that I'd written this song about her. But she was very, very sure that I'd written one. And she visualised it, you know, I did. And then I said, if the other granny hears this and she's not in it, she'd be going, where's my song,
Jamie?
So I thought I better, than just, you know, I better include her and the other two granddads in it. So I included, I just looked into the four grandparents all there. I looked into their histories and that, you know, they're all born around 1912 and they're all, what are they saying, 1916 and the War of Independence and the Civil War and, you know, all these, the troubles, the border campaign, they would have went through all this stuff, you know, they would have seen all this stuff, you know.
So there was something in her message, it feels like going, there's a song here to be written about our experience under colonisation or under the power of the crown.
Yeah, something planted something in her head that I had written the song. Maybe the ancestors had told her, here, tell your grandson, write a song about us and about all the people of the world who were subjugated. Quarter of the globe by one country, by Britain, the quarter of the globe. But, you know, Britain were not the only ones. But European colonialism is, I think, the biggest crime that the world has ever known. That was, and they got away with it scot-free, you know. They just walked away into the sunset with all the bags of money that they earned, you know.
If I was a gangster, that's how I'd do it. I think it was fucking, without being disrespectful, they were gangsters and they done the fucking most gangster thing that's ever happened. You kind of have to admire it a little bit. They went full fucking tilt, didn't they?
Yep.
And the counterbalance to that is the music, is the songs, is the films.
Yeah.
So we can fucking understand it.
Absolutely. They ripped up the real books, the law books, ripped up the Bibles, their Bibles, everything, you know, and just done all this stuff. And pretended to be Christian all the way through it, you know. It's incredible what they got away with. Scot-free. Unreal.
The stuff they did in Australia is still very evident today, you know. It's very, it's in, you know, when you go down to Alice Springs, you know, when you're in Australia and you're on the coast, it's lovely, you know. Yeah. It's like, you know, gorgeously. And then you go down to Alice Springs and so the one thing that you witness is that beautiful Aboriginal culture, you know, those lovely people, like, you know, absolutely beautiful people. And they're still very, very connected to the earth and the spirit and all that. Like, they believe every single inch of land is holy.
Yeah.
You know, so when you put a railway across that land, it really upsets them, you know. The one thing was, I met this guy down there and I asked him, I wanted him to be on the podcast that I was trying to do down there. I only did one podcast down there, but I was trying to get him on and he was like, why would I want a podcast with you? And I was like, our history's the same. And he was going, it's not. And I said, no, it is. Yeah. And I told him about,
all he saw was your white skin, yeah.
Yeah, and I used to say, I'm not white, I'm Irish, you know, and they used to laugh. They'd be calling each other over. Here, listen to this fella.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So I actually sent him the colony. And he keeps talking to me. I'm still emailing him. I'm talking to him through email, you know.
Beautiful people, the Aboriginal people. They said the British Empire, I don't blame the ordinary people of Britain. They were, you know, when you look at like how wealthy Britain was in, say, the 1800s, and look at the conditions they were in, like, you know, they were just kept down. They had a foot on their head, you know, yeah. Really kept down in, you know, third world conditions. And they were just... their working conditions, their living conditions, you know, they were hungry, sick, poor, you know, when they're being sent to Australia, when they tried to set up unions or anything, you know, they were just cannon fodder for these people, but they were sold this lie that they were superior. I'm just reading a book now, the creation of the white race, you know, these fellas, I think it was around the 1600s, these guys thought, how can we subjugate people, you know, around the world? We'll make up this thing that we're the different race to them. There's a white race and a black race and all this stuff, and the white race are superior, and we'll do all this, you know, they're measuring their heads and all this shit, you know.
Size of their brains and all.
Yeah. All this bollocks, yeah.
There's a thing called happened in Australia in 2007 called the intervention, and there was a lie, an ABC program that this youth worker in inverted commas was interviewing, and he was talking about childhood sexual abuse going on in the communities, and it was all a lie. They just made it all up. There was a big cry then for the government to respond to it, and they shut down five pieces of legislation to bring in this thing called intervention. They brought the army in and all, and it has turned out to be a lie, you know, and there's still those laws are still there. Like, people are still paid on a card. They don't have access to money or any of that kind of stuff, and there's all these laws about alcohol and stuff like that. Now, Aboriginal people have their own law.
Yeah.
And there are communities that are completely alcohol free and have been alcohol free for 25, 30 years, like, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the thing is that today, like in 2024, they don't ask Aboriginal people about their future, you know. And even when we had the voice, you know, I don't think people really knew that it was going to be so opposed. You know, that when they voted against it, it was going to be so opposed. And that's today. That's 2024, you know. So when you go down there and you see apartheid, you're like, oh man, it's
so shocking. The gangsters are still in.
The thing for us, like, I've seen Alice Springs legalizing. I've said that before, you know. There's layers of different communities and cultures, right? I met loads of white Australians who are absolutely sound people. You know, you say in that song, Colony, and they teach you in your school about your glorious days of rule. Hmm. How you're destined to be superior to me. So that's the line that you've come from. If you've been reared in that.
Yeah, it's fed into you.
It takes a certain type of person to go, that's actually not, that's wrong, you know. And there are loads of people like that. I met savage people down, you know, really, really sound people down there who were involved in community work. And there was a man who was in his 70s who was still working in the communities. Like, he would leave his family for a full week in his 70s and then work for a week in the communities and come back up for a week and down for a week. Yeah. So there's people like him that were absolutely, they're legends, like, you know what I mean? So, you know, I don't think it's just a white and black thing. I think it has to be about, the healing has to come from within. It has to come from everybody. You know what I mean?
I was listening to an Ice Cube interview the other day. Ice Cube, NWA, big black American rapper. And he says, the racism is in our heads on a normal everyday people level.
Yeah.
We've been taught this and we just play that game. He says, I'm trying to live in a world where that doesn't exist, where I just take you for who you are.
Yeah, fair play to him. He's an open fella, him, yeah. I remember him talking about Irish history when he played in Dalymount Park, you know. Blown away.
I remember you telling me that you were into hip hop when I met you. Because we're friends 25 years. So I'm 50 now. So 25 years ago, you told me you were into hip hop and I nearly fell off my chair. Because I thought I was I'm mad about hip hop. That message. What was it about the hip hop you were connected with?
It was just, you could, it's the storytelling in it, you know. The expression and the storytelling, I suppose, you know. I wouldn't be so much into the gangster stuff, you know. Because a friend of mine from, I met in New York, he was a DJ Nico. He's a black guy from New York, great fella. But he told me that a lot of these young kids who are great rappers are pushed by the record companies to, you know, say they shot him or say they'd done this stuff they hadn't even done, you know. They were pushed into, you know, saying all this stuff, you know, because they're going to sell more records, you know.
There was definitely a turnaround when NWA, but before that I was listening to Public Enemy.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. A Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, all these savage rappers I saw over there in New York. I love the stuff that was going into the history of black America and trying to, you know, heal some of the problems and that, you know, some of the trauma and that, you know. I love the stuff that was historical, and Ice Cube was like that. He was a bit historical.
I remember listening to the Sugar Hill Gang and they were talking about White Lions and crack and all that in New York in the late 70s, early 80s. And then I look out my bedroom window in Ballymun and I kind of seen a similar landscape.
Sure.
Then that was the connection.
Yeah.
There's something being healed here.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's just bringing up the poetry, you know. Hip hop has sort of bring up the poetry and young people, young working class people from all over the world, you know, and just young people in general, you know. It's allowed them to tap into their poetic soul, I think, you know. And, you know, don't need to play anything. You just, like, start writing down your thoughts and your feelings and making the words and rhymes and raps and the rhythmic play on words, making it beautiful, you know.
It was totally unique, wasn't it?
Yeah. I remember being down there in Australia and just meeting the Aboriginal people, and I went out and on tours and that and saw how they used to live with the land and how they looked after the land and made sure they didn't, you know, tore it out, and the way they replenished it. And it was ingenious, you know, absolutely ingenious. And their song lines, the way they had mapped Australia in song. And I just think that the colonisers who went down could have learned an awful lot. If they had just took the time, they could have learned an awful lot off these people, you know, about spirituality and how they look after the world and the land. And there's a lot of, they have great wisdom. If people listen to them now, the way the planet's been, you know, sort of wrecked, there's a lot of learning and wisdom how they could help heal the planet now, you know, if they listen to them now. Just they have all this great knowledge and wisdom about the earth. And so I think the key to the future would be to ask people like the Aboriginal people, you know, how can we, you know, not wreck this place? How can we look after it and make sure it's sustained and just cherish it, you know? Because if you look at the colonising countries and the Industrial Revolution, like it was all about profits, you know, making profit from the earth. And now you can see the results, the consequences of that now, you know. So they thought they were so intelligent, these heads, you know, but how smart is it to destroy the only home you've ever known, you know what I mean? How smart is that? That's not very smart, I don't think, you know.
I think we will get there to that point where we go back to the Sandbush people.
Yeah.
Or the ancient Irish, the Inuits. I think we'll get there.
They're so long looking after the land, the caretakers of the earth, and it worked, didn't it, for so many
years? Yeah, and
so
in their world, there's no time. It's timeless, it's endless, it's boundless. We're living in this time, money, power, ego-oriented world. And there will come an age where we'll go back to them.
Yeah.
And we listen to them. We listen deeply to them, to the Aboriginals.
There is an awakening, I think, you know. I mean, there's people are talking, lots of people talking about stuff that I'd never heard them talking about, say, 20, 30 years ago. That lots of people are tuned in a bit, you know.
We have to take the ancient wisdom with us. And we have to take what Dame is talking about there as well. The raping of the land, the pillage of the land. We have to take all that learning with us and go forward, because we do live in a society now that is dependent on fuel, that is dependent on food that is grown and all, you know. So we're very dependent on a certain way of life that we have. Now, there are ancient wisdoms there that we tap into, but we can't go back because we're only in this moment. So we have to move. We have to take that with us and do something with it going forward. But we don't know what's ahead. Fear is a big part of society. We look at the weather now, and we look at all the climate change and all that kind of stuff. 20 years ago, people laughed at that, you know, and now it's happening. And I think there is now the norm of Joe's Hope is saying, we have to change. We have to do something different. So let's do that. Let's change now. When people hear, let's go back, they're like, back to horse and carrots and all that kind of stuff.
What I'm saying is to go back to them, to go back into the room with them and go, what's the wisdom? Impart your knowledge on us. What did you write down? What did you learn? What do you know? What do you feel?
Try and incorporate that into the modern life.
Absolutely, yeah.
Modern.
So many days are in there.
You were saying you were hearing stuff people are talking about now that you didn't hear 20 years ago.
Yeah, there's an awakening happening, definitely, yeah. Mindfulness, meditation, ayahuasca, mushrooms. There's lots of kids just not drinking now. And, you know, there's back when I was young, you know yourself, sniffing glue and just trying to do anything to get out of your head, like, you know, just to get locked out of your head, to be saying, you know, just to get rubber and just, you know, just get away. All the kids be doing all sorts of stuff just to, I don't know, just to escape or something, you know.
Obliterate what you were feeling.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
They're feeling it. I talk a lot about feelings. We're in a bit now where we're feeling the stuff.
The shaman are waking up, that's what I've been hearing, you know. And there's people doing ceremonies. And remember in the 80s, like, I don't know. It's like, and we still had the Roman Catholic Empire standing on our heads, I think, a bit in the 80s, you know. There's stuff coming out, there's a lot of healing coming out, you know. There's skeletons coming out of the closet, you know. All the abuse in the church and that, you know. There was lots of good ones in the church and there still is. There's lots of bad ones as well, but at least they're being exposed now, you know. Industrial schools and the Magdalen laundries and the, you know, the mother and baby homes, it's all coming up now to the surface. And I think there's a lot of healing going on, you know. I think there's a lot of positive things as well. There's a lot of doom and gloom around, but last year, say, a third of Irish electricity power was from wind energy. A third, you know what I mean? That's a huge leap, like, you know what I mean?
Still very expensive.
Still very expensive, bastards.
But that's a huge leap, and, you know. When did that start happening, like the wind energy?
Yeah.
It's only very recent, you know. I have a lot of hope for the future. I think science will start out. The environmental crisis, I think it's science will find a way for it, you know.
I think science will, when that thing that you're talking about dissipates, which is this desire just to keep making money, more money, more money, more money, you know.
Yeah.
I remember being down in Killary Harbour, you know, and I was watching the tide coming in, and I was thinking, imagine you put a turbine, and I would say to people in Killary Harbour, they would be saying, go away, Sparky. Mm. But if you put a turbine in that gap under the water, right, and as the power of the water went through that, in and out, you could capture that power.
Absolutely, yeah. If we just start doing that all around the world, we could run the world without no fossil fuel, you know.
That's it.
And but there's blocking, there's something stopping it there, isn't there? The big companies, the big oil companies are blocking all that stuff.
Of course. We still want the cars. We still want, we still want to be able to get on a flight and go to Ibiza. You know, we want all those things. Our go-to is, and we hear it all the time, that's the government's fault. It's not the government's fault. We are the government. We are the state. We are. So it's got to do with any changes that needs to happen. We have to start here. We have to start with ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm planting an oak tree tomorrow now. If you ought to plant a few trees, I think it'd be good.
That's a great idea.
Good start, yeah.
We sat with Damien, we were up in Hout a few weeks ago, and he introduced me to a tree. About 400 years old, is it?
The big, massive oak, yeah. Yeah, that's a beauty, isn't it? It's a beauty.
I've only really, since we were talking to his mate Stephen, he was on here, like, I wouldn't have never thought about trees, I would have thought, you know. Yeah. But I did hear the trees communicate with each other, you know, with the wind and all that kind of stuff. And and it makes sense, you know, they're a living thing, you know.
I spent about 2.5 hours rubbing a tree up in the hill of Tara. I was knee deep in mushrooms though at the time.
You dirty fecker.
The tree was calling me over going, come on over here, I have something to tell you.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So come here, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks a lot, Dean. Great to see you, brother. Great to see you, Sparky.
Thank you, bro.
Two angels from Ballymun.
He has wider wings than me now.
It's been great not seeing you as well. You know.
Thanks very much.
No, it has, because I seen you at a funeral a couple of weeks ago, and I hadn't seen you in ages, and you were like, I'm like a hermit.
Yeah, I'm sort of, the lockdown sort of got me into this bit of a lone wolf thing, you know.
Just well, I think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's lovely. Like, I'm living up in the Cooley Mountains, and I'm walking the hills on my own for hours and hours and hours, and it's stunning.
Yeah, I know, it's deadly. I always was a bit of a monk at heart, you know. You know, just love silence, you know. Just love peace, a fire going, and just I just work things out. Then I need a lot of space just to work the world out for myself. I type in, tell what to think, you know. And that's why I think the phones, the kids are on the phones all the time now. The phone is telling them what they should think, you know, how they should think and how they should look and how they should feel and all. So I think you just need that bit of downtime to yourself, just to, you know, just to think about things and use your own feelings and thoughts and just to work the world out, you know.
It's the mad the three of us kind of hit that at the same time, you know. I was an Alice, like, you couldn't slow me down to save my life. You couldn't. Like, people were saying, will you ever take a break? Will you ever sit down and chill out?
Yeah.
And then when I went out to Alice Springs, I was staying in the gaff. That was very quiet. The people who lived in the gaff were Muslim, you know. They prayed five times a day and they were quiet. There was a baby crying in the house now, but even that was very natural. It was very normal or something. Yeah. But I had this space to, like, to just do that thing which you were saying there, just to find my own thoughts. Yeah. And it's funny, like, I'd hear people saying to me, you know, that fear thing I was talking about, people, you know, full of fear, they're going, they're bringing all these refugees in and the blah, 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 right? And they're like, where did you hear that from? Where did you get that information from, you know?
Yeah.
And they'll tell you then that they got it off some Facebook page or something, you know, and just you're saying they're telling you what to think, you know?
I know what to think, yeah.
And I'm saying, what's your thought on it? What do you think? And they don't have a thought on it.
That's it, yeah.
And then some people would say, oh, I might go off and have a think about it, you know? And then, like, you know, I work with young people, and young people will pick up on all that stuff, you know? And then when you sit down with them and say, what does that look like? You know, they were saying, we only want an Ireland for Irish. That's what they said, right? And I said, what's that look like? I said, right, first of all, I said, we'd have to stop speaking English. So we'll have to learn the language.
Yeah.
And you could see them looking at me going, no. And I was like, well, yeah, you know. I said, no soccer, no rap, no, they love the old Scouse hip-hop, you know. They love that stuff.
Right.
And I said, no Scouse hip-hop, no pizzas, no kebabs. I just kept naming. I kept going. No, Canada Goose.
Nettle soup.
Nettle soup, there you go. Because when you think about before the potatoes, that's what people were foraging.
Put you in, no Guinness. Just put you in.
But that's potato. You can't.
That's right, yeah. That's potato, yeah.
And the wheat wasn't natural to hear either. You know, it came. These all came with. So we were saying human beings are naturally, we've been nomadic. The people from Mongolia went over the ice into what we now call North America. Same people, same traditions, same cultures. That, you know, Aboriginal Australians, Native Americans, Mongolians, right? They all had the same traditions when it came to the earth. They were all connected to the earth in the same way. And they never met each other. They didn't even know they existed. When you say to people, have a think about that. Or just even have the conversation. Instead of going, no, you're wrong. Blah, blah, blah. I just try and... The travellers say jive, you know.
Yeah.
You're jiving me, you know. And I think it's a great word. Get a bit of jiving going. Get a bit of... Just dance with it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I remember saying to a fellow one time, I remember you were on Tommy Tiernan and he was talking about the black dog or something like that, you know. Tommy Tiernan says, I just bring it for a walk. I remember I said to a fellow one time, I said to him, what do you do with your madness? He said, I dance with it.
I ride it.
So, did you say you ride it?
Ride the dog.
Ride the madness.
No, the madness, not the dog. Not the dog.
The dog's getting ridden.
I was at a youth centre yesterday with three girls teaching them how to podcast. And it's in a part of the country where there's going to be 500 refugees going to a hotel up in Drogheda. And they were like, we're going on the protest. And I was like, okay. Let's do a little bit of work here. So I said, how many Irish people are there? And they were like, we don't know. I said, Google it there. And it came up 100 million Irish people. And they were like, there's not 100 million Irish people living in Ireland. And I said, no, 96% of them don't live in Ireland. And they were like, so are they immigrants? I was like, now you're getting it.
Yeah.
So most of us, of who we are, who you want to go back to.
Yeah.
We're immigrants.
Yeah.
And that's a hard pill to swallow sometimes, but it's a beautiful pill.
I know. That's it. There was a book of invasions. All the different waves of invaders that came to Ireland. And the people coming now are the first ones, I say, to come in peace, you know. The rest of them are coming with swords and all, you know what I mean? Taking land and, you know, all these waves of invaders who came to Ireland. These are the first ones to come in peace. My crowd, the Dempseys, we went to Quebec on a coffin ship and came down to Massachusetts, walked down there, worked in cotton mills and then said, fuck this, going home. And we came back to Mayo. But then my granddad went to that place, let her frack. But I have this analogy that I got from just being, you know, having my own space and just thinking things over. I have this analogy now that whenever I start beating myself up, and I haven't done it in a good while, you know, because I use this analogy now. My head starts going autoimmune, starts attacking me. I just think, I see it at the frack industrial scale, I'm in front of it, just looking at it. A lot of Christian brothers there standing outside and looking at me, you know, belts around their knuckles, you know, bats and all, saying, you know, beckoning me, come on in. And if we go in, they're going to fucking smash me up, you know, and torture me. And that's me torturing myself, you know. So I just waved at them. Sometimes I waved at them, smile, and I walk down to the beach and go in for a swim. Beautiful down there, it's a beautiful beach, you know. Or sometimes I get a machine going and just riddle them, cut them all in half, you know, with the machine going and just laugh them and walk out. Depends what mood I'm in. But that's, I stop myself from beating myself up with that analogy. I go, stop, and it stops it.
In my head, because I have a premonition about this, like yourself, because when I was young, I used to have premonitions. I'd know who was going to knock on the door next. But I had a premonition of you on a stage outside Letterfrack inviting people in with music going, come on in, we own this, let's own it, let's all stand here.
Sure.
That's already happened.
Yeah.
There's a group down there that's down there. Yeah.
I was down there, we had a great sing-song session down there, yeah. Just in the, they have a, they're doing a lot of stuff to heal that affleck, you know. They have a furniture repair company there, and they have a little publishing company and a bookstore and a radio station, and, you know, they're healing it, you know. They really are. They have a hostel there and youth hostel, and they've taken it over. They've taken it back, you know. They're putting good spirits in now, you know.
We'd go swimming down the High Rock, and we'd get a bit giddy, a bit high after the swim.
Yeah.
And we'd own the giddiness by doing the Charleston.
That's right. It was brilliant, wasn't it?
It's a good thing to try. If anyone's out there swimming, when you get that swimmer's high,
yeah,
just fucking dance.
Or just do the Charleston. You know, with your mates, you know, when you meet up, just do it for about 2 minutes, you know. Always lift you. What lifts me as well, anybody listening at home, if I need a lift, I stick on this video. It's Donny Montel from Latvia. He's singing on the Eurovision about 10 years ago. He does a song called Love is Blind, but you have to watch the video, you know. If you watch the video today, you don't feel better, I swear to God.
I was in Liverpool. I went over to see Damo. We've a good mate over there called Prousey, you know, and I was looking for Damo, and Prousey said, he's down in the cafe on Matthew Street. I was like, which one? And he goes, the Laughlin Hardy one. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with Laurel and Hardy. My dad loved Laurel and Hardy.
Was that what you said, the Laurel and Hardy one?
Laurel and Hardy. Say it again then.
Laurel and Hardy.
Laurel and Hardy.
All right, our kids.
So when I went down, I was obsessed with Laurel and Hardy. I loved it. And my dad...
Like a crush, like?
A crush? No, that hadn't...
You trying to ride it?
That hadn't developed then. I'll go back to that now.
I'd say if you got underneath the big fella, you'd get crushed.
I was gassed that you liked them as well. And I remember going in to see you in that cafe, and you were just sitting looking at the screen, eating a bit of scran, and you were just pissing yourself laughing, you know.
Yeah.
I was just sending you YouTube videos, right, of all that time, you know, them. And it's absolutely savage, isn't it? Like, brilliant. The stuff that they were doing was just...
It was deadly.
The sense of humour then, right? Like, the Laurel and Hardy stuff is, I think, all modern comedy comes from that era, like, you know. It comes from,
you know, when you try to say modern proper there, when you try to say it proper, it wasn't right either. Modern, you said. Modern.
I'll say it the original way. Modern.
Modern.
There's
modern,
a D4 accent, and then there's a 4D accent. Yeah. Modern.
And Lazarus Soul have an album called The D They Put Between the R and the L.
Isn't that's right, yeah, 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 great album.
Petrodiddle, Fionicle, Minicle, Squiddle.
Orden and Childerton.
And I think the older I'm getting, like, I used to hear me nanny speaking like that, you know?
But
I didn't speak like that. I had a different accent. And now I have that accent. Isn't it mad you grow into it?
Yeah, yeah. Me granny and me dad spoke like that, yeah. And me other granddad as well.
So my phone throws up memories, you know? And there was a picture of Franco. I'm very emotional at the minute, you know? And,
yeah.
I had a little tear because I loved him, you know, he was great.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you, where's Franco now?
I believe he's a fella I know who's a bit of a shaman, said he was with all the ancestors, having a great time. So, I think he's all good. But, you know, after he passed, you know, I wasn't there. Like, I was doing the 20th anniversary of Other Voices, you know, when he passed. And so I came back anyway, and I was asked to write the eulogy for him, you know. So you're the man of letters. I think one of Gary or said, you're the man. You're the man of letters. I thought, what?
Give it to Damien.
Give it to Damien.
He'll know what to do.
So yeah, I went down, had a few points in me local with all the outfits there. A real old man's pub, it's all just fellas in their 70s and 80s, so I feel really young there. I feel like a spring chicken, you know.
Nearly 50 now, Damien.
It's great. I can't believe I've made it. Well, I haven't made it yet, but hopefully I will. But all the Elfless there, and he died to that song, Time to Say Goodbye, Andrea Bocelli, beautiful song. They put that song on for him because he had learned that song, learned it in Italian and all.
He was a great singer.
I found his notes phonetically. He'd written it out so he could sing it to his Mrs. Eta, you know. Lovely woman, Eta. And he died to that song he played. He died in the middle of it. And then I was down trying to write the eulogy. And There was this woman at the bar, you know, and sort of a exotic looking woman, about in her 60s, with a friend. And I was going, what the? I was just wondering why she was in here, you know, because it's usually just old men and myself. And she just started singing then. About 9 o'clock, she started singing. And what did she sing? She run the Italian, started singing, and then the chorus, she sang in English, Time to Say Goodbye.
Wow.
I was going, my God, I never heard that song sang anywhere. Yeah. Only on the TV by the Italian guy.
Have you sang it yet?
I haven't sang it, no, but...
Is it in you?
No, Jesus, no, I don't know. And then I saw her again. She lives in Italy. She was only over to see her grandchild. She's from next door, the chipper next door, McCarty's, you know, Tony. And I asked her, lovely man. I asked her a few months ago. She said, I believe you've been talking about me on stage in the Abbey Theatre. I said, I was telling a story. And I asked her, do you sing much in public? And she says, I never sang in public until that night. So, can you imagine? You know, I think that was a message. That was Franco.
It was a little gift to say to you, look, I'm all right.
That's not a fucking message. I don't know what is.
Isn't that incredible? And then the next day, he had about four songs he sang. The next day, Emma was walking out with my brother to go to work, a mechanic. And he was walking out the door and he heard a song for Ireland. It was Franco's song. And he checked his phone. And he walked back in the kitchen. Where is this? And it was coming from the speaker. The speaker had just come on and just played this song. You know, so... And then the next day, Rona Collins played on national radio, Gilbert O'Sullivan, Franco's song. All of them, she's heard it all over Dublin. Nothing rhymed.
I love that one.
So that was the third Franco song. And then the last one, I walked into a pub a few days later and the whole place was singing The Rare Old Times. That was his four songs. And a few days after he died, you know, so that's the spirit of war. That's how powerful it is, you know.
And when John died, Karen said to him, how will I know you're okay? He said, I'll send you a message. 2 days in, she was lying on the bed with his iPod on, you know, and she used to listen to it. She used to fall asleep to the iPod until it ran out of power. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, it just came on.
Yeah.
And she had the headphones in and she woke up like Emma with the speaker. And then a couple of days later, I had bought an internet radio and there was a station coming from Drogheda called The Freak. And John used to put, that was John's word. If he didn't like it, he'd call you a freak, you know. He's a freak, she's a freak, you know. And the station was called The Freakery. And again, the same thing, 5 songs in a row. When he passed away, he left 3 songs that he wanted to play at the funeral. And Karen was like, that's the only 3 songs at the funeral. And our mate Eamon's a priest and he said, look, it'll be a very quiet funeral if you don't have more songs. My friend Maria, who has passed since, lovely woman Maria Place, she offered her and her mother to sing at the funeral because they knew John, they were mad about him, you know. So they decided, they asked what would they sing, and John died at Christmas time, so they said they'd sing Silent Night. I was in the gaff one day and I was feeling really raw, you know. I'd went down to see you down in Killarney, you know. I was thinking I would break down there or something, you know what I mean, and it would all shift or something, and it didn't, nothing shifted, you know. And I was sitting in the gaff and the 5 songs played on The Freak and I was like, Jesus, that's very unusual, you know. And then I switched the radio off the internet part onto the Dublin, as we might call it, Pran Dublin. And it was Silent Night, you know. Oh, and I was like, how are you, John?
Yeah.
And that's all I said. I just went, how are you, John? And I knew he was okay.
You're okay. It's beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, it's a beautiful thing, you know.
It's lovely to see you. What you can't see at home is Sparky getting to the point where he's about to go.
I'm like that all week.
It's lovely.
And Dean helped me. I was talking to Dean on the phone the other day. We were talking about when I was a kid, I was mad into Toya Wilcox, and my mate bought me a ticket to go and see her. And it was like, this was something I liked when I was 13. I'm fucking 55 now, you know.
Yeah.
But I started listening to one of her songs, It's a Mystery, you know, and it's fucking very spiritual, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was at the connecting with that and getting very emotional. And then I was talking to Dean on the phone, and I was talking about what it was like when I was drinking. So I started to feel empathy for the person I was when I was lost, you know?
Yeah.
And when I said I was lost to Dean, it brought me to a darkness and a place that was very, very vulnerable, you know?
Mm.
And I felt very vulnerable, you know? And I was walking down to the gig. I was at the fruit market going down to Little Mary Street. And when you think about that area, like, it's very... That's where the Abbeys were, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I went down, I just started crying, and I was walking down the road talking to him on the phone, and it didn't bother me. I had no shame. And, you know,
great.
Christy has a song called Feel No Shame. You know, and I didn't feel any shame. I was walking down Cable Street and it was just flowing out of me. And it was like, it was beautiful, you know.
Crying is beautiful, absolutely.
And then when I went down to the gig, Toya came out and done a fucking karaoke, right? It wasn't for me, like, you know. But then she done It's a Mystery. And I was like, I was minded when I was 13, you know. Even though I was lost, I was minded, you know. And, because I always thought I was lucky. I had this thing about nothing ever bad happened to me, you know what I mean? There's nothing ever bad really happened to me, you know. And, you know, I'm blessed to have my parents are still alive. And, you know, I have an aunt who passed the other day, Rose, and she was 90, you know. And she was lovely, you know. And even then when she died, my sister rang and told me and I was in work and I just broke down. And it was really natural. It was lovely.
Crying is lovely. Love is beautiful. But I was telling you, I had a... On my writing table, just this Padre Pio coin just appeared. Just stuck there it was. I'm just thinking about when it was stuck there. It was just when my ma just got cancer, you know. That just got stuck there and I couldn't get it off. It was there for about a month. I just sort of left it there and then it just came, one day it was loose, you know. I think it's just when my ma just got cancer there, but she's beating it, you know. She's fighting through it. She's a warrior woman, an incredible woman. But I'm just thinking that was a little sign because my granny... Little Annie from Dunlavin, she was mad into Padre Pio. I think that's what it was, yeah. That's what it was. And that's just recent. And one more thing that happened just last year, a friend of mine just lost his mother. And he came around to my house, you know, and I just said, come on down for the chat, you know. And we were sitting there and I said, has she made any contact yet? And he said, no. She has to my brothers, but not to me, you know. And we were just sitting there chatting. And the picture just fell over, you know. Boom. I went, Jesus, what was that? I said, well, already forget that anyway. But then the TV came on and it's on.
I'm calling.
I just said, are you sitting on the controls, eh? And he wasn't, you know. I thought I was, and then they were over about 10 feet away at the piano, to your controls, you know. I said, yeah, Mammy's here.
It's a mystery.
Mammy's here. He was over the moon then, you know, over the moon. It was lovely.
And in that song, It's a Mystery, somewhere in the distance, hidden from my view, she talks about sometimes it's far away, sometimes it's near, sometimes it's loud, you know, and I was like,
yeah.
I was jumping around my bedroom at 13 years of age, jumping from the bed into the fucking, you know, just listening to this music, and I didn't realise the joy of it, like, you know what I mean? And it's just a mad spiritual song.
Yeah.
And again, she wrote it at 18 years of age in a flow.
Yeah.
She just
came to her,
Just came to her.
I think we're all spirits, we're all ghosts walking around, you know.
I seen you on video the other day, you were doing the Kill Mine thing, and I seen Franco in your cheeks. And I was like, does he know? Because when I look at you, I see part of Franco.
Yeah.
And true. I remember you brought me down to that big house, and there's a black and white photograph that I sent you when Franco passed of me, you, and Franco.
Emo Cart in
Emo Cart, is it?
That was on the Dempsey Tribal land.
Because you were going, we should take this land back.
That's right, but we were going to do that, remember? We're going to just claim a little bit of it back, the Dempsey Tribal lands, yeah.
But it reminded me at the start of the conversation because we were talking about the Aboriginals and it was kind of like, that's your Aboriginal land.
Yeah, it was gas. He was in bits there. Like, well, he was, at that time of his life, he was bollocks, you know, but he just started walking. We walked around the whole lands and he flew along for about 2 miles. He said, I haven't walked like that in 5 years. You know?
He allowed me to connect in with him as well when he had his own black dog a couple of times.
That's right, yeah.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, thanks for that, buddy.
It was a privilege to be able to listen to your dad.
Yeah.
As it's a privilege to be able to listen to you. And me and Sparky have a special privilege because we're your mate.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, we've had some great times, haven't we?
We've had some amazing times. Tears and Charleston's and slagging stuff.
I thought you were going off the head that day, right? You were saying, I want to claim this land, you know? And I was like, see, yeah, right. And I actually think Apollo House grew out that day. I think that there was a talk of an act of defiance, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, if you went there, I was thinking in my mind, if you had it turned up to take that land, right, and say, this is Dempsey land, this is ours, we're taking it back, and, you know, as an act of defiance, like, you know, which would have been deadly. I don't think it would have had the impact that Apollo House had.
No, that was...
And I know you were involved in Apollo House You know, but not up front, you know. Dean and Glenn and different people were up front and they put you there.
The father was very ill at the time. That's, you know, right, so yeah. Frank, or what you call it.
You and John sang us in.
Yeah.
You and John Connors opened the doors.
Good old John, yeah. Yeah, we had a few meetings in my house, didn't we, about it?
Yeah, we were planning. If anyone has a video footage of that, please delete it now. It was the early stages of a revolution.
Well, he was one of them, the powwow. And,
that's right, a powwow, that's right. Bob.
They were great. Remember somebody give out to you, Dean, saying, you can't say powwow. And Dean, being Dean, got in touch with a Native American friend of ours.
Yeah, mate, Gary White there, saying, oh, you can use it, Dean. It's
grand. He's Puerto Rican, isn't he? The old shock time, man. Some artist, incredible.
Gary White there said something to me one day that just blew me away. I was like, he's a Native American, like, you know, and he was talking about, what? You know, he's just, look at what happened to those people, like, you know.
Yeah.
And I was saying to him, do you feel hatred? And he's like, no. He said, it was meant to be, you know. And I just went, man, that is deep. Mm. It was meant to be, you know. And you just think, yeah. That's now come out. I haven't reached that point, you know. It's meant to be. I haven't.
It's there. It's waiting for us all. It's meant to be. That point.
Yeah.
I remember chatting to a mate of yours, Keith, and he was going through some stuff.
Keith, great man. Yeah.
So me and Sparky have a friendship relationship with you, but you've got another group of friends like Keith and that.
Yeah.
I say, what? I was thinking in my head, what did these lads get from Damien? And then he started to just show me some stuff and reveal stuff and talk to stuff and just be honest.
Mm.
And just like Sparky was going, I'm not quite there. I don't think Keith was there until that moment.
Yeah.
He just went, here it is. Here's the wisdom. Here's the lessons I'm getting. And so from me, from Sparky, from Keith, from all the people, and thanks.
Oh, cheers. Thank you. All I've got from you is, you know, all the wisdom I've got. You know, it's just... you sort of surround yourself with people who are on a similar frequency, I suppose, you know. And you just share any wisdom you pick up along the way, don't you?
Absolutely, man.
And are there as a shoulder and to give you a little hand up. And
there's times you send me messages. I'd be like, how does he know what I'm thinking, you know? It's mad. And he's the same. Like, Dean would ring me and he'd say something, and I'd be like, how does he know this? Like, you know, and
it's when you're open to it, isn't it?
Yeah, you're open to it. Yeah, you're open to the frequency.
And all you know is that you don't know.
Do you know what the Aboriginals say? Listen outside and listen inside. Listen outside and listen inside. Listen deeply, yeah. They were talking about what it was like nearly 20 years after the intervention, like, you know, and what it was like. This is like, you know, when we talk about the famine, and this happened in 2007 to them, you know, and it's like, you know, you think that human rights would be at the fore, but they were just whipped away. They could just be taken away like that. And it was all down to a spoof. It was all down to fake news. Yeah. ABC creating fake news, you know.
Yeah.
Just like, I just felt nothing but hatred towards them. It was hard. It was bad. And then I had to I had to let it go, you know.
Hey, hurt you more than them. Eats away at you.
We were talking about forgiveness. You have a line in the song, forgiveness is the key, you know.
Yeah.
And I often have to sing it because sometimes things were done unto me, you know, over the years, and I have a lot of hate, you know. And I remember a fella saying to me in recovery, he said to me, forgive them, you know, and he was like, forgive him. And I was like, I won't forgive him. There's no way I'll forgive him. And he said, I'm not asking you to forgive him for him. I'm asking him to forgive him for you. And I couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
And then I realized when I forgave, there was a teacher who battered me, you know. I remember Jonathan talking about it, you know, and the same thing happened to me, you know. And I know I was lucky. My dad went down to the school and on and challenged him, but I still had a scar of a resentment of I still had a scar of a resentment in me, you know. And then when I forgave that man, it lifted, you know. I actually felt it lift, and I was saying to them earlier, it lifted off my spine.
It's like carrying the bag of fucking spuds around, isn't it, that you're not going to eat?
Yeah, but it was like
fucking rotten.
It was on my spine. I could feel it when I actually, you know, I'm not saying that it was like it happened and then 5 minutes later it was jumping around like, yeah. It actually lifted over a time, but it lifted off my spine. You know, stuff, it came at me, you know, it was, that's what I was holding it, you know.
I'll sing is a bit of the, it's, I'll sing a little bit, just the a cappella of a new one. Just to be able, what you're talking about there, you know, but this would be rough as a badger's arse, but sure, look at.
Sure, look at
that,
how you.
The passion will be there. I've been holding on to feelings from a wrong done long ago. It's like picking up a hot coal for to throw. If I'm gonna find some healing and cease this inner self-attack, no more pointless selfish loathing, wasting precious days that I won't get back. Let it go. Just let it go. What we put out there into this day, it will find a way for to grow. If you truly seek forgiveness, you must find it within you. It will come with reparations and the good things that you now do. Let it go. Just let it go. We can make this world a better place in a little way. Don't you know? Just let it go. Let it go. We can change somebody's world today in a little way without them knowing.
What used to, lads, now? Have you any idea how much good you've put in, you know, how much positive vibrations that you put into this island with all the people, all the young people you've helped and saved, and, you know, how, you know, putting them on a better trajectory on the right path has helped them put other people on the right path, and it's like a ripple of love that just goes, carries on across the land, you know. You'll never know how much good you've both done, you know.
I see what you're doing now, Damien. You're turning it the other way to us.
So what?
I feel it every moment.
Ah, brilliant. That's great. That's great. I hope yous know, you know. I hope it helps you through yous at dark times, you know.
Yeah.
Love you, brother. Thank
you, Damien. Thank you, brother. The moments are dark, but at the same time, at exactly the same time, the light is there.
Sure.
Whoa.
Let it out.
And for me, it's been always.
Sure.
From the moment I came in till the moment I go, all day, every day. And that's the journey.
That's the journey, sure. Sure.
You know? That's the journey. And I let it go.
Yeah. You let it go, sure. That's it.
I think that's for it, me, brother. I'm in awe of used to, you know what I mean? I just do what I do because I do it, you know what I mean? It just happens, you know what I mean? I couldn't, as I said to you when we were starting out, I wanted to be an electrician, you know? That was my gig, you know? And then went down to a youth club one night and my granny had passed away and I went looking for the youth leader and they said he's in Ballymun. And I went looking for him. I couldn't find him anyhow, but I remember I came out to the youth club in Ballymun. Dean was there, very young. You were very young. Hugo.
Wild.
The time you met me, I'd calm down. I'd stop robbing factories at 10 and I met him at about 11.
Dean was very sensitive. Yeah, very spiritual, very sensitive young man. Me and Dean cycled. There was a big gang of us cycled to a place called Ballynockin. You know where Knockin' Stockin' Festival is?
Yeah,
we cycled there, right? Now, you think about that now, right? This is before the M50s and all that kind of stuff. We cycled to Talla, out, up the embankment, out, over Pleasanton Lakes and left down at the Valley Mount and then down over the mountain into Ballynochan, right? And he was on a BMX.
His mother had lovely legs.
The jumblers who came with us who are still cycling back.
That's how long that trip is.
He was 13, right? And I remember he came off the bike. We were coming down the embankment and he'd no brakes on the fucking bike, right?
He was a foot in the front of the
wheel.
Like a BMX, no gears.
And the thing was, right, we were having these conversations. I'm not that much older than Dino, like, you know what I mean?
There was a moment when I was 14 where I had a lot of pent up emotions and energy.
Sure.
And I sat in a room with Sparky and he showed me, or he listened deeply, and that allowed me to open up and cry in front of him.
Brilliant.
And when he cried in front of me the other day, it was that moment repeated or reversed.
Return.
And I remember in that moment when I was crying, thinking, how can I repay this man?
Yeah. So that was like a ripple that went around the world.
Exactly.
On a wave and came back to Ireland.
Yeah, exactly. It went down to Ballynochan on a BMX and it took 40 years to get back.
Well, here, it's only
a drop in the ocean, isn't it?
I was so mad the other day and an adult thanked me for what we did, you know, what we all did. Like, I mean, it wasn't just me and it wasn't just Ian. There was a group of us. There was loads of us. And it was a community, you know, and it was great.
There's people like yous all across the earth, which is beautiful, you know, to know.
Yeah, brother, you're one of them. So stop fucking trying to get out of the limelight. You're one of them. We're all just channels. We're not taking any credit for it.
We all are just but conduits.
We are conduits, and that's it. Like, I heard somebody else saying it.
Everybody is, isn't he, really?
Yeah, I think, like, so I like being in the now. Like, I know we go back and we're mad about looking back, but I don't dwell back in there, right, because what's going on now is amazing. There's great stuff going on. There's a great video of the woman Harper, I forget her name now, and she's playing with Paddy, you know, from Mayo, you know, out of Chieftains, Paddy with the beard.
Matt Malloy.
Paddy,
most common.
Pat Malloy.
Paddy from Mayo.
He has a pub in Westport, doesn't
with Sparky.
He does, yeah.
He has a pub in Westport. So I'm not that man. But Matt Malloy, right?
Yes,
so Matt Malloy, so look this video up. Matt Malloy playing with this female harpist, right? Oh my God. You're the most unusual artist in Ireland, I think, right? Because you're not a star. Like, people approach you there now in the cafe and all, and says, you're very spiritual, you're very connected with ancient wisdom and all that kind of stuff. You have this amazing show. Myself and Willie White and his partner Linda went down to see it in Vicar Street, you know. And I'm not mad about being in places where there's loads of alcohol.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But it was magical standing over that crowd responding to you. And even my mate Jeff, his young fella, who never knew who Damien Dempsey was, Jeff got tickets to go and see you in Vicar Street. And now the young fella is besotted, which are live album. The live is a very, very special experience. And I suppose my question I want to ask you is, do you still get that same buzz, or is it a chore? Are you like, when you're going down to Limerick to play a gig, are you like, oh, for fuck's sake? What age are you?
I'm 49. 49 in June.
You're 49 in June, so you're singing. You're 30 years going on stages.
I always just think that there's people here now. On the day of the gig, I'm thinking there's people all across the city now, or across this town and out into the country, who've been living for this now for weeks, months, you know. Yeah. And they're out there now somewhere and might be just finishing work, or they're having a wash, going to iron their clothes, and they're buzzing, you know, they're buzzing for this night, you know. And it's sort of, it gives me a great buzz as well, you know. I start getting excited, you know, just thinking of them. And they're going to meet their friends, or they might get, some people go alone and just, they're going to have a big fucking communal fucking sing song. Gonna sing like there's no tomorrow. Sing like it was the last day on earth, you know. And they're gonna get all the tension and the stress and the anxiety, it's gonna be gone out of them, you know. During that 2 hours that we'd be singing together.
Or do you be thinking of the person who's the Damo Virgin?
Yeah, yeah, dragged along.
I love that phrase though. Ah, you're a Damo Virgin. And then after the gig, they're like buzzing.
Yeah.
Full of love.
What the fuck was that?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just that I grew up in sing songs in Cabra West and Coolock, my aunties and uncles, and down in Ringsend and Irish Town, and grannies and grandads and Dunamade and neighbours' houses. And it's I just remember when the whole room would start singing, when someone sang a song and we'd all join in the choruses. Just that feeling, it was just magical. You felt just safe and warm. You were part of the tribe, you know. You feel, it's like that feeling you feel on Christmas Eve when you're a young kid, you know, or Christmas Day or whatever, you know.
It's lovely the way you articulated that in the Abbey. The process of you sitting down and writing that and rewriting it and then getting up and performing it. Because I think I was there on opening night and I could see the fucking nerves in you. And it was lovely to see you vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah, but terrified.
People got an insight. I remember thinking, they're getting to see what me and Sparky see or hear what me and Sparky hear.
Yeah,
that's right.
The stars, Damien outside the songs.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And the pay the mortgage Damien.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's a tough old game, but me people were, you know, at one stage, my dad was panel beater, Emma was a mechanic, and the other brother was in panel beating, you know, so for me to, you know, be able to walk out on stage and have people, you know, I'm going on a tour of the UK, you know, and there'd be people like in Gateshead coming out to see me, and, you know, Manchester and Birmingham and Bristol and London and Glasgow, you know. And just have these people coming along, just they're dying for it now. They're excited about it now. They'll be coming along, they'll be singing these songs, you know. You know, I just feel so blessed when people say, that must be a pain in the hole, is it, you know? Doing all them interviews and they're going, are you serious?
Yeah.
When you think of, you know, me family going under the car, you know, January morning, you know.
Oil dripping on their face. I went to see David Gray a few weeks ago, another spiritual experience because it brought me back 30 years ago to Whelan's, you know, and the ghost, there was a few ghosts in Whelan's that night, let me tell you, and they were lovely. But David Gray is a bollocks. He looks the same as he looked 30 years ago. He still has the hair and everything, you know.
Hologram.
But you're
I'm trying to get one myself. I'm trying to save up for the hologram, you know, to do all the shows for me.
Your mate, Neely McCall, was there. He plays with David Gray, you know. He's some player, isn't he?
Neely.
Is that his name? No.
Rob Malone.
No.
From Mayo.
Matt Malloy. You and McCall, yeah?
Was it one of the McCall brothers, yeah. Sure. You and McCall's son.
Yeah, Neil. Is that
Neil? Neil, sure, yeah.
Son player.
Ah, they're amazing. Yeah, they're an amazing family then.
I met this friend of ours. He said, the best gig I was ever at was Damo in England. Instead of them going, Damo, they're going, Damo, Damo. I remember being blown away, like just in the electric ballroom, was it?
The electric ballroom, Camden. Yeah.
First year sobriety. Wow, deadly. Right. Just seeing you there was just, wow. It was amazing.
Lots of people come here in recovery, you know, to the show.
We meet them all the time.
They don't need a drink at the show.
No.
Paul Hatton was saying there yesterday up in Kilmoyne, a few of the lads came out of Kilmoyne and they said, we walked out of there buzzing. We were like high as kites.
Great to see those two worlds together.
Yeah, absolutely.
The drinkers, the non-drinkers, the drug users. It's fucking lovely to see they're all in that one room together.
Yeah, that's it.
Bumping off each other. And I think there's an opportunity for the drinkers to look at the non-drinkers going, could I do that?
Yeah.
Bounce around like that.
You can't be the sober sing song, you know. No. Just had one yesterday there up in Kilmoyne. Everyone singing for about an hour and a half. We were buzzing coming out, you know. There's no downside, you know. We're just a natural high and there's no downside, no come down, no hangover.
I see what they get from it. But I was wondering the other day, what are you getting from that? Because your relationship with Kilmoyne is stunning.
I know that the heads are going through an awful time, you know. An awful thing trying to come off the old poison, you know. The sing song just helps them through. It just gives them a great lift, you know. And you have the power to do that, you know. So I do a lot, you know. I go to schools and a good bit, you know. I'm going into a few schools now the next month or just around where I'm from. Me and a friend of mine, Philip Cribben, a great man out in Galway, you're an activist, you know, we're trying to get schools to do a half an hour at the end of each week just where the kids sit around and have a little sing-song or tell a story or a joke or something, you know. Get them into that tradition. The lovely old sing-song tradition that is a great link to our Gaelic past, you know. Just get the school children doing that, you know.
I love the seed you're planting, like the play in the Abbey, the film with Ross, the sing-songs in the schools, just a new album. There's probably a book as well, is there?
Yeah, they're asking me to write a book, I'll see. As my dad said, don't be telling all our fucking secrets.
Keep some for yourself, Damien.
When he was about to do the Abbey, that's what he said to me. He pulled me aside.
Family secrets.
Yeah, the squinty eyes. Don't be telling all our fucking secrets.
Well, the helpless one is, don't be volunteering information. They must have grew up with that.
Hey, was your man out of the Simpsons, Joey Tightlips? Who said I had a mother? Who says I have a mother?
I went to Ivy Gardens last year and I got very high on the frequency, you know. So I can understand how somebody could go to one of your gigs sober and then go, fuck this, and go on the gargle try and come down, you know.
Just go home and have a bit of warm milk and honey.
There was a woman there that I know, and she had been smoking weed for a long time, you know. Mm. And that night she stopped.
Did she?
You know, she's still not smoking, you know. Right. And she just felt at the end that energy that I felt. She got it, and it was savage, you know. And it's hard, you know. I was asking you there about when you're coming off stage, or what does that feel like? And it's very hard to kind of, when you have a collective energy, you know, you were talking about the sing song and that collective energy.
That's fucking weird.
When you're having a collective, it's very hard to explain that energy, you know what I mean? Because it's not just me, it's, you know, I'm just experiencing it, like, you know.
It's my job to give the people there the night of their lives. You know, they want them walking out the door on cloud nine and still be high for a few days after it, you know.
And are you feeling it? Are you picking it up the way I'm picking it up?
Sometimes you are, sometimes you're not, you know. You're just trying to do the best show you can, you know.
Yeah.
It's all about them, not me.
Like, for me, if I was to pick that up every day, man, I think I'd get addicted to it. I'd want it every night then, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's great to hear you saying sometimes yeah and sometimes no. I'm glad to hear that, because I'd be thinking, I have an addictive personality, I think, and maybe I don't. I definitely felt it that night. I went out, like, I'm not joking you, I went out on cloud nine. It was just, it was savage.
My job is there to make the people feel like that.
Yeah.
It's not about me, you know.
And how's the well now? Your well, the place that comes from?
Yeah, you have to replenish it. Yeah, definitely you have to go and replenish the old well by getting into nature and, you know, still in the mind. And
How's the songwriting?
Yeah, good. I've a new album ready now, coming out this year, and then doing a ballad album as well. So, just because I've lots of young fans, and I know if we do all these old songs, all traditional Irish songs, that the young kids will be singing, and maybe when they get older, they'll be singing them to their grandkids and pass on the old treasure trove of Gaelic gold. You know,
that's deadly.
Do you want to give us one?
Yeah, there's one there they could sing. Yeah, from Zosimus. Michael Moran, he was from the Liberties, born in the 1700s, a blind busker he was. He had this old song that my uncle used to sing. Uncle Fran used to sing this in Cabra, in my granny's. Just the language is very old, you know, so I rejigged the last verse, I think it is, just to make it more modern, so young people would get where the story is going, you know. But 80% is his lyrics, you know, but I don't think he'd mind that he modernised it, you know. Modernized, is it? Modern. Fuck. Modernized.
Brought it up to date.
Modernize.
Modern eyes.
You have very modern eyes.
Modern eyes is better. It's that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Modern, I'm only fucking messing with it.
Modern.
Keep that going. Keep that old tradition of the old real old dub.
Oh, I love
that torn of phrase going.
My uncle, Jerry, is 90 and he has a real, I say, a Joycean way of speaking, you know. Yeah, very common, Damon. Remember your woman, Damon?
Yeah, very common.
Yeah, I was told that when I sang a song one time, a girl from Finglas says to me,
yeah, very common.
I said, so what, fucking you?
Yeah, but I wouldn't sing like that.
Well, I would now, fucker. This is it's a lovely bit of imagination, you know, because he goes to Egypt in the song. He's brought Dublin to Egypt, or he's brought Egypt to Dublin, you know. It's called The Pharaoh's Daughter. The finding of Moses, yeah. That's lovely old Dublin, isn't it, you know.
It was in the old Egypt's land, contagious to the Nile. The old Pharaoh goes that door, she went to bed in style. She had her little dip, then came out on the sand. And to try her royal pelt, she ran along the strand. Well, a bulrush tripped her over, whereupon she saw a smiling little babby wrapped up in a wad of straw. She took him up into her arms and says in an accent of mild, "Be the thunder in Jesus' girdles now, are the witch you own this child?" Well, she took him up into her arms and he gave a little grin, for she and little Moses were standing in their skin. "Be that," says she unto herself, "it was someone very rude who left a little babby by the river in his newid." She went up to her old lad who was sitting up on his throne. "Dash is she, can you find this a young baby by a home?" "Abby Jesus," says the Pharaoh, "I've taken in far worse. Go me there, little daughter, and find for him a nurse." Well, the nurse says to the Pharaoh, "I'll search in every nook, from the Phoenix Park down to the fair at Donnybrook. And when I get the herald of that babby's a man, I'll kick them up their asses from the Nile up to Cabra. He'll then walk the young one who had left the little child. She walks up to the Pharaoh with a smile as wide as the Nile. Ah, thanks for minding, Moses. I was in the market square. Are you free next Saturday when Cleo was doing me hair?" Well, the nurse says to the young one, "Bollocks." Look at it. The nurse slid up behind her with the frown and then a grin, and she kicked at the young one's ass so hard that the pyramids near fell in. I've never played that before live, so I made a bollocks of it. But sure, that's live radio, wasn't it?
You didn't make a bollocks of it. It was lovely.
Ah, fuck it.
It was gorgeous. It was lovely. There's some visuals in that song, bro, wasn't there? I think there was a few mushrooms going on back then.
Moses. Who's that character you're playing?
Moses.
Moses.
I remember I heard in the Wolf Town singing it, and it was a bit diddly diddle diddly diddle.
Sure, it was different.
But you make it your own, and it's lovely, you know. The way you sing it is the way it should be sang. I'd say that's the way Zosimus sang it. You're probably the ghost of Zosimus.
The ghost of Zosimus.
He probably has... He's probably taken over your body, you know. That spirit has been around a long time.
So I'd love to think so, you know. I'd love to think so. Yeah, just passing on songs like that, you know.
The phrasing in it is lovely, you know. The man, Dan, and all. And,
the Saturday. Yeah.
I'll give you one more of it. This was Jim Larkin's favourite song.
"And come tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Push a vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear honors from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon. For the pikes must be together at the rising of the moon. And come tell me, Sean O'Farrell,
the gathering is to be. At the old spot by the river, quite well known to you and me. One more word for signal token, whistle out the marching tune. Put your pike upon your shoulder at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon. Lovely. Put your pike upon your shoulder at the rising of the moon. Out from many's the Motherwell cabin eyes were watching through the night. Many a manly heart was beating for the blessed morning light. And murmurs rang along the valley like the banshee's lonely croon. And a thousand pikes were flashing by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. And a thousand pikes were flashing by the rising of the moon. All along that singing river, that black mass of men was seen. High above their shining weapons flew their own beloved green. Death to every foe and traitor, whistle out the marching tune. And the rabid voice for freedom, 'tis the rising of the moon. 'Tis the rising of the moon, 'tis the rising of the moon. And the rabid voice for freedom, 'tis the rising of the moon.
Nice one.
The Sing Song.
The old Sing Song. Thanks for singing that.
Jim Larkin's granddaughter met my father at a trade union thing, you know.
Oh, lovely.
And she came over to me and she said, I always wanted to meet you. My dad was like, what? She thought he was Captain Mannering.
Fuck off.
So that's his nickname.
You're kidding me.
His mate's called him. We have him. It's in the gaff. He has a Captain Mannering statue on the mantelpiece and all. That's his nickname.
Hello,
his
chaps. Mates.
The Captain. That's his nickname, the Captain, yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to sing. Because we were sitting back here, like, and you're belting it out, and it's like, are we allowed?
Yeah. I'm not jazzing with me.
Your music gives people permission to sing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Open it up. Let
encourages
it
them.
Let it go. Let it out.
There's a young fella comes into the club, you know. He was singing with the iPod in his ear, you know.
Mm.
And he kept singing out a tune, and I'm saying to him, take out the iPod. Just listen to your own voice, you know.
Yeah.
So he's learning by TikTok. He never finished out the phrases. I'd be saying to him, you need to finish the phrase right to the end and then start again, right? And he couldn't get it, and then he was getting it. But he came in the other day and he just sat down and he just done what you've done there. He just sat down. Can I sing a song? There, go ahead. And he just belted out a song and he sang in key. He sang in time and he finished out the phrases, right? This is deadly. This is he's getting it. You know, you know when you get it. Savage, isn't it? The music. You know, you were saying it puts a vibration through your body, like, you know. Yeah. I've had it myself, you know. I sing sometimes and I'll never be able to sing that way again. You know, I'll sing a song and people go, that was magic. And I go, yeah, but I don't know what I've done to make it that way. I think for us, in our tradition, it's got to do with the connection with the spirit and the connection with ourselves, you know?
Definitely, yeah. Absolutely. And there's a Japanese fella. They're only after realising this. It's like it's people that are sort of, it's like it's being pushed down or something. This Japanese fella, he had a microscope on water, you know? And sank to the water, then froze it. The water, you know, then microscope back on the water. These beautiful crystals appeared in the water. He has a book on about it, you know. And when you sink the water, you know, it changes the molecular structure of the water into just beautiful crystals when you sink to the water. And we're mostly water, humans are. But yeah, I have a song about that, you know. It's just science has discovered when you sink the water, molecular structure comes on like the dawn. And we're mostly water. So bad thoughts you can slaughter, you know. When we sing together, goodbye Babylon, you know. Singing is it's a great friend. Playing an instrument, you know, any sort of music, great friend. They'll never let you down. They'll be with you for life. And just sing. I just say to people, sing 4 songs a day to yourself, you know. So it doesn't matter if you're out of tune. Just sing to yourself. You can just, if you can't remember, type up the lyrics of 4 songs and just sing them every day. And you always feel better after the singing.
It's helping me with the healing. It's helping me with the fear.
Mm.
What I noticed through that was I'm most afraid when I'm on my own, separate.
Mm.
And when I'm with Muse doing music, there's just an energy there. You know what I mean? And then that allows me now to go back home and be on my own for a while.
The yin and yang, isn't it? The balance of the two.
I'm brutal with the lyrics, so I just make them up.
Okay.
Fly me to the moon.
Where the whip-dee-whip-dee-whip.
But I just let it out. Going into Elwyn's houses, washing windows and all, we'd be singing and whistling just going through in case the Elwyn was half naked and bleeding. So we'd be just making mad bleeding songs up.
In our pelt.
Here I am coming in to wash the windows.
Your brother and Emma could make up a song about you, you know, just slagging you and rhyming off the top of his head. Should have been a rapper, I suppose, shouldn't he?
Damien, thanks for joining us on the Fresh Batch.
You're brilliant, lads. Thanks very much for having us and all the great work he's doing in this community and beyond, you know. I've been sort of shy of the twirling fella, you know, so talking is a bit of a challenge, but just I have to push myself to do it, you know. I don't do many interviews anymore, you know.
Yeah, great in interviews. I don't know why you don't do interviews and speak your truth, because people need to hear this stuff, like, you know what I mean, about what you're saying, you know, about singing, and people are lost. They're lost in that, you know, that kind of trying to strive and, you know, trying to make money and trying to make more money or whatever it is that people think will make them happy. If you're saying singing will make you happy, you'll be happier singing, or you'll be singing in community. I know a woman who joined a choir recently. It's the best thing she's ever done.
Depression buster, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so
some doctors say that to people, instead of giving them the meds, they say try a choir for a while, you know.
That's actually what happened to her. That's right. Exactly what happened. She actually went for help and they said to her, join a choir.
It just is trying to still the mind, you know, as often as you can, isn't it?
But it's lovely.
Try and stop your mind racing, you know, even for a minute or two a day.
But it's lovely singing with other people. Like, even there, now, the three of us
when you're singing, you're there. You're not thinking about, you know, next week's fucking bill or the row you have with your, you know, whatever.
I love the two of yous.
Yeah, I love you too, Bert. Love yous.
Being thanks, in your company, both of yous, helps me. I don't sing, but I can talk and I can listen. And that's my gift. That's my medicine. The gift and the medicine that you put out into the world is those precious vibrations, that precious music. Speaking for the nation, thank you, brother. We love you.
Yeah, we love you.
Good meal, Margaret. Thanks, Les.
Slán go fáil.
Slán. And thanks, Jer.
Thanks, Jer. Brilliant,
Jer.
Jer Kelly.
Fuck off, will you? Fresh, yeah?
Did you ever find a guitar that was in Franco's attic, no?
Which one?
The Yamaha. I had three gears.
I have a guitar of yours, yeah?
Yeah. Where is it, in your gaff?
Yeah.
You said to me the action on it is so bad you'd need an arm like a leg to play it.
Yeah, my fucking voice grips. Make great kindling.
Really good, really enjoyed it. I suppose a bit of wisdom in there for people listening and a bit of healing in there and that, you know, so that's great. Well done, brother. It's a brilliant podcast. That'll help a lot of people now. Fair fucks.